And I really do hope that this can be interactive, because I have some theories around time. I've done a lot of research on time. I've done a lot of observation of the kinds of things that happen when people are in a regressed state or a progressed state. So I did mention before that I teach past life regression, but I also teach future life progression, because there is no limit to where we can go. And it's been a really interesting journey as I've observed the things that happen for people, the incredible shifts that can be made from discovering a past or future life and what's happened in it. My very first experience with that, when I had been trained in a technique called timeline therapy. And timeline therapy doesn't formally do past life regression, but I'm one to experiment. So, and this was long before it was the popular thing to have been a witch that was burned at the stake or something like that. And I'd always had a deathly fear of dying in a fire. Had no idea why. And I was playing with my timeline, and I thought, oh, I wonder if I can regress and find out just something about myself. I wasn't even thinking about that in particular. Just, I wonder if I can regress and find out something about another event from another lifetime that might be affecting me now. And so I regressed myself and found a lifetime that I had been burned at the stake. And I kind of went, whoa, that's pretty wild. However, what I realized when I got back to present time was I no longer had the fear of dying in a fire. I had done no intervention on myself. I had done no clearing or releasing or anything like that. All that had changed for me was I understood where that fear had come from. And bang, it was gone. And so that got me really interested in the possibilities and the potential if we understood time better. So I started exploring it more. I have since then done a lot of other training around professional past life regression and future life progression and that, and have actually developed my own technique around it. And again, I've just really found some interesting experiences when I take people into other lives, that they're there. They're not here. They're there when they're in that other life. So from that place, it's like, what is time? All of a sudden, it's like, oh, maybe it's not so linear. You know, because we think of it as being this, you know, so we got this time, and this is yesterday, and this is now, and this is the future, you know, and so we're here, and that's time. And that's what we tend to think of in 3D. And that's really, for the most part, that probably is the extent of our capability when we really truly stay in the three-dimensional state, and then the fourth dimension being time, being linear time. And I believe that that's been designed for us for a very specific reason, so that we have that experience of progress, that we've progressed from here to here to here to here, so we can look back on our past and say, oh, you know, I used to be, and now I'm at this state. And we can look forward to our future and be excited about the things to come and set goals and everything like that. So this traditional three-dimensional linear view of time can be really valuable in that respect, because it gives us a sense of today is today and yesterday was yesterday and tomorrow is tomorrow. To the extent that we actually all carry an internal timeline, and that's how we organize our time. And that timeline varies from person to person. For some people, it's a line out in front of them like this. For some people, it, you know, their future can be here and their past can be here, or their future in front and their past behind, with their present inside. There are a number of different variations on what our timeline can be. And if that's something that interests you and you want to study it, I recommend the book Timeline Therapy. It's written by Dr. Tad James. And it really goes into the different types of timelines and how they affect us and everything like that. But in its simplest terms, our timeline affects us from the place of we organize in that respect. So if you've got your past out here and your future back there, you're probably going to be really frustrated, because what you're always looking at is your past. You're always looking into your past instead of thinking about looking at your future, because it's back here. Now, there aren't many people that organize their time that way. However, I have met some that do. And most often, they are very hopeless people. They have no hope for the future because they can't see their future. Now, the good news is you can move your timeline. So If you're one of those people that all you can see is your past, you might want to consider getting your timeline moved. But it's, I find it just fascinating that even our language describes our timeline. If you've ever met somebody that talks about, well, just put that behind you, 9 chances out of 10, they're going to be one of the people with their future in front of them and their past behind them. So they do literally put that behind them. When they have an event in their life, they put it behind them because they've gone through that event. Whereas people that have their timeline this way, so maybe their past is here and their future is here, they don't ever put things behind them because it's always here. It's always visible. Now, they may be the type of person that has lots of motivation for the future because they can see their future very clearly right here beside them, but they might never be able to get over things in the past. And that construction is entirely here. It's entirely in our mind, the construction of how we organize time, because I have moved people's timelines for them, and it's completely changed their experience in the world. So a person that has a timeline this way that goes right through them is generally one of those people that is just in time. Like they show up someplace just when it's about to start, or maybe 5 minutes late, and they don't really care if you're 5 minutes late because they don't have a real concept of, oh, I'm late, and other people might have been waiting, and that sort of thing. Which, that can be a really good timeline organization for someone who's very in the moment. Because it's very, you're in the moment. You're in your timeline. However, it can be frustrating for someone that needs to organize things and get things done. Whereas a person that has the timeline out here, out in front of them, they are very methodical, very organized. They're not in their timeline. It sits in front of them. And so they're always looking forward. And those are the people that will show up a meeting 10 minutes early, and because nobody else is there, they'll get their to-do list for the day done while they're waiting for everybody else to arrive. And by 2 minutes, too, if the other people aren't there, they're like, where is everybody? They're very much aware of time and very organized in that respect. So there is a value for both. And I gave you the examples of the pure timeline out here and timeline through a person, but there can be all kinds of combinations and variations, and very few people have that pure timeline. But the experience of that being completely internal and being able to move it and have a completely different experience when your timeline is moved was another one of the triggers for me that I went, wow, there is way more to this time thing than just this. So over the years, I've heard a lot of definitions of them, of time, and the reality of time. And for a while, the one I liked the best was, think of it, of all of our lives, rather than linear. So if our time was linear like that, then, so we're going to make this a micro timeline now. And each one of those is a life. And that's how we think of time, right? We think of if we've had a past life. So again, we're here. So this is lives that we had previously. And we think of them as the past, right? Like, you know, in the 1700s, I was such and such. And in the 1300s, I was such and such. That's how we tend to think of past lives, is like that. And future lives, well, how could they possibly be affecting us because we haven't had them yet, right? Have any of you had a past life regression or a future life progression and experienced other lives? No?
Tonight.
You get through tonight. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
But most people, this is how they think of their time. That it's, you know, past and future. However, the next step on my journey with time was, it's now. Everything's now. Because right now is now, and right now is now, and right now is now. And wherever we are in our experiences is now. And when you go into a past life, you're there. So it's now. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if now is always now, then how does this work? How does linear time work? It doesn't quite seem to fit. So the next definition that I heard that I kind of liked was, okay, it's layers. Which really just takes this and turns it this way. I realized afterwards. But, you know, you can kind of do some fun stuff like this. So think of those as DVDs, and this is your DVD player, and so whichever DVD you grab off of the stack and put in the player is the life that you're in right now. So it does somewhat take you out from of that linearity, because maybe you play this life first, and then you play this one, and then you go and play this one. You could be moving around in those experiences as opposed to necessarily going lifetime by lifetime. So that took it some out of the linear. How does that fit for people?
Some question.
Yes.
So is it safe to say that we've already done this already? When you think of the timeline in terms of this is already played out, we're just now in this aspect of just remembering this stage or getting to this part of it now.
Maybe.
In that sense.
Maybe. Or maybe not. I don't think we can define it as fully as saying we've definitely already done this.
Mm-hmm.
We may have. Or we may have. We may be doing the Groundhog Day thing. Maybe we want the same experience over and over and over again, so we do this kind of life or something very similar repeatedly. But there's lots of possibilities around that. And so maybe yes and maybe not. So that was the next one, and that fit for me for a while. That gave me enough that it's like, okay, I can go into a past life or a future life. And so I started doing that, again, from a linear perspective. So if someone wanted a progression, most often in a progression, you're going to obtain resources as opposed to release things that no longer serve you. You'll find, if this is your first past life regression, that you may find some lives that are kind of yucky. Because most often, those are the ones we go to first to clean up. And then, as you go into more past lives, you may start to find ones that aren't quite so yucky. Most often, when you go into a future life, you've progressed. By the very definition of this timeline, when we go into the future, we're making progress. We're learning more. We're learning lessons along the way. So by that definition of it, we will be more advanced beings or more, we'll have more wisdom as we go into future lives. Does that make sense? So from this perspective, most often when we go into a progression, we're going to obtain resources. So we're going to find a lifetime. Let's say I wanted to do this. I wanted to speak publicly, and I was terrified of being on the stage. Never done it, didn't know how, but I had this calling. I had this information I wanted to share. So one of the things I could have done was go into the future and find a lifetime when I was a dynamic public speaker. Integrate that energetically into my experience and bring it back to now, and that would assist me in my ability to speak publicly. So that's what I'm talking about a progression and obtaining resources. Now, certainly you can go into a future life and find experiences that are worth clearing or releasing as well. But most often, they're going to be far more beneficial. Now, the cool thing that I've been finding about progressions and regressions is when you clear it in another life, it clears it in this life. I've had people release phobias, release chronic pain, release old belief systems, those kinds of things by going into another lifetime and clearing it there. And probably my most drastic experience of that, and this was pretty early on when I was doing this work, and we actually didn't even do a past life regression, we just did a reading. I did a session with this gal. She came to me and she said, I'm afraid I'm going to kill my husband. I'm kind of like, what? And she said, if he is even 5 minutes late, I am so terrified that something's happened to him. And she said, I understand thought creates reality. And she said, I worry about him so much. I'm afraid I'm going to cause something bad to happen to him. So it's not like she was thinking about murdering him, which was a relief to me. It was that she was so concerned about him. And she says, it's absolutely irrational. She said, when he is with me, or I know where he is, I don't worry at all. And I know there's nothing to worry about. But she says, the minute he's late, I almost hyperventilate. I'm so scared that something's happened. So we started exploring other lives for her, and I found a lifetime that she had caused his death. And so as soon as she had any uncertainty in her life, that was the memory that she went into, because she was carrying that at the cellular level. So we did a clearing on that. We released that experience for her. And then I didn't see her for several months, and she and her husband stopped by to see me one day, and she said, "It's great." She said, "When he's late, he's late. I don't worry about it anymore." So she had, once she had the source of that fear released, she was no longer going into that. And a lot of times the cellular memory that we carry from other lives can be an irrational fear, because there doesn't seem to be any source in this lifetime. So with that model, I was like, okay, that's pretty good. I was good with that one for a while, but it still wasn't enough. It's like there's something more. Because if we're always just here now, if now is all there is, and we're always just here now, then there can't be layers. It's got to be more dynamic than that. And so there is one particular gentleman who I really like his work. His name is Lee Carroll. He channels an entity by the name of Cryon. And he's written, he's channeled a lot of information, and he's put it into a lot of books. If anybody is interested in the Cryon work, I recommend you go onto his website. It's Cryon, Cryon.com. And there's hundreds of hours of channeled information on there for free.
So we have some of his books, too, in the library.
Yes, we do. There's at least two or three of them up there in the library. So what he said was, time is circular. It's all now. Okay. Time is circular. It's all now. That still looks like a mind to me. I can't quite resolve that. That's still linear. So it's like, okay, well, maybe time really is linear then, and it's just so big that it looks like it's a straight line. Because this is a life, this is a life, this is a life, this is a life, this is a life. So, like, okay, maybe. What do you think? Is that possible? So if that's the case, and that, I believe that somewhat is the case. That's one of the definitions, but it's multidimensional. It's not just a linear line like that. So in this model, then, is any other life a past life or a future life? Because we can just keep right going right around the circle and get right back there, right? So let's say we do something in this life here. Maybe we drop a Kleenex. Assuming the Kleenex is going to last. A piece of plastic. It would last, right? Because it never biodegrades, right? So we drop a piece of plastic here. And so then we continue on through all of our other lives around here. So at this point, when we're walking away from that life, we've dropped the plastic here, we're walking away from it, it's past life, right? But as we come around here, so we go all the way around our circle of existence, and we're here, and that piece of plastic is there. Is that from a past life or a future life? It really doesn't matter, does it? Because it's just all now. It's all an experience of now. And so I don't believe there's a right answer to what time is. But there's so many possibilities other than this little linear experience that we think of it as right now. So now let's take this one step further. Do I have you far enough down the rabbit hole yet? Let's go one step further down the rabbit hole. What if that circle was three-dimensional? So it was a balloon. I can't draw three-dimensional. So we'll just do this, and you're going to have to pretend. So it's a balloon rather than a circle. So that balloon is our existence of all our possibilities. Now, I believe we can take that balloon to two levels. That we have a balloon of all of our possibilities in a lifetime. And then we have the big balloon that is all of our possibilities ever. So each one of them is multidimensional. So we got all these little balloons bouncing around inside this great big balloon. Okay? So we're going to talk about the little balloon for a minute. You've probably heard about, you know, nothing is predetermined. Right? We're not predestined. But we do have predisposition. We have possibilities that is part of our game of life. So we come into a lifetime with possibilities or potentials of what it is that we're going to work with. So when we come in, this balloon is right full of all of the possibilities of the potentials of what we're going to have happen in that lifetime. Now, maybe one of the possibilities is that we're going to become a professional dancer. And so there's all in that balloon, there's all of these possibilities of becoming a professional dancer. At some point in that lifetime, a decision is made, you know, it's our decision. Now, I'm not talking about a conscious decision, you'll understand that when I say this. A decision is made to lose a leg. So now this person had all of these possibilities and potentials in their balloon of being a professional dancer. They now no longer have a leg. The likelihood of them being a professional dancer has probably gone down to, what, 1 in 100 million. So then all of those possibilities disappear. So we still have the balloon completely full of possibilities and potentials, but now those ones have disappeared because of decisions that have been made. And so constantly throughout our experience, that balloon is changing based on decisions that we make, which is why a psychic really can't predict your future, because all they're doing is tuning in to the possibilities or the potentials. And so it may be a given that it's going to happen. And we change our mind about something, we do something different, we've now changed our future. And again, I'll give you an example of this, because when I teach classes, I always say to my students, because I teach intuitive development, and I always say to them, this work is not about predicting the future. You are not to predict the future of people. You can give them possibilities, you can give them potentials, you can give them likelihoods, but don't give them anything like this is going to happen. Well, one of my students is, he's incredibly gifted, has very clear second sight, and he was getting a ton of future information for people. And he remembered the warning, because he said to me afterwards, I know you told me not to do it, but I did it anyway. So he was working with a couple, and he told them all about the things that he was seeing in their future. And they were all like, woohoo, they were excited and everything like that. And a few weeks later, she called him and asked him to come over and do some more work with him. And as soon as he walked in the door and sat down, he said, you've changed your mind. Because all of a sudden, everything he saw in her future no longer included him. And she said, yes, I have. I've decided to end the relationship. Well, the guy in that situation then called my friend and was furious. He said, you told us all of these things were going to happen. And that's true. At that point, that balloon, because they were together and their plan was to stay together at that moment, that balloon was full of all their possibilities and potentials as a couple. And as soon as she ended the relationship, all of those possibilities and potentials disappeared out of the balloon. And then he had his balloon full of possibilities and she had her balloon full of possibilities, but they were no longer intersecting the way they had before. And he's been very open about sharing that in classes when I'm saying to my students, don't predict the future. He's like, yeah, let me tell you what happens when you do. You end up with clients that are really upset with you if one of them, or if they change their mind about something. So although there, and that's not to belittle psychics that predict the future in any way. A lot of them have very clear second sight, and based on where you are at this moment, they may be absolutely correct. However, if you change something, and it can be something really small, then that future changes as well, because that balloon full of possibilities and potentials then changes. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, open to questions, feedback, your observations. I know that was a lot of information. Yes.
So when you had the other circle up with all the lifetimes mm-hmm. around it, and you come around and you see a piece of plastic, is that when you have deja vu?
Could be. Could be. Or it could be that your brain, it has, there's been a little catch, so you've registered it before you consciously register it. Those are the two possibilities of deja vu. But yes, that is a very real possibility. Been there, done that. Yeah.
I have a question, Bonnie.
Yeah.
from your experience, and you talked about psychic abilities and reading in the future, can you elaborate a little bit on about how you perceive the differences between a psychic and, say, somebody who's an angel reader and comes, gives insight to somebody about their future or talks about it? Do you see differences between that? Do you see that all as a kind of psychic thing, or are you, do you see the from an angel reading, it's coming from a divine place where it's a more spiritual connection? Do you have any thoughts on the differences there?
Yeah, I do. And it's kind of an either-or thing, because a psychic tunes into the non-physical, but they go to wherever they go. And so they may tune into the divine, absolutely. However, not necessarily. Because depending on what it is that they're looking for. So if I just went, oh, show me the future, I haven't done any work on tuning into a specific vibration or dimension. I'm just saying, show me the future. Now, some psychics do that. So some of them are non-discriminatory about where they go for their information. So are they tuning into the divine? Maybe, but not necessarily. Now, there are others who classify themselves as psychic that are very particular about it. And they're like, I want the highest divine and energy. And so are they tuning into the divine? Yes, they are. So that's the two categories with people who would classify themselves as a psychic. Now, you know, it's a little bit like tomato-tomato. You can take an intuitive and a psychic and put them together and say they're exactly the same thing.
And how does astrology work into
that? I can tell you about that in just a minute. Or you can take those two apart and say, okay, this person is doing something really different than this person. So for the purpose of splitting the two apart, my definition is a psychic is someone who is non-discriminatory about what they're tuning into and they're willing to predict the future. An intuitive is someone who is very clear about where they're tuning in, and they're tuning into the angelic or source energy, so they're being very clear, they're going to the highest potential for the person, and they have that shield so they don't predict the future. Other than, you know, sometimes I'll get a real clear message that like 3 to 6 months, there's going to be an opportunity coming up, you need to pay attention. That sort of thing. That, so sometimes there will be some future information. The way in which the information is received doesn't seem to make any difference to whether you're predicting the future or you're not. Because we may see it, hear it, feel it, or know it. And most people that do intuitive work do a combination of those. They don't do just one. So, did I kind of answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, it isn't necessarily either or, but it may be. And if you are working with someone who claims to work with the angels and they start giving you fear-based messages, it's not the angels you're talking to. Because when we reach to that really high energy, to source energy or to the angelic energy, it is a very, very loving energy that we're reaching to. And that's one of the other differences too, is frequently people who classify themselves as psychic, they're not, because they're not discriminating about where they go to, they may give you these warnings, like, oh, these terrible things are going to happen and stuff like that. And trust me, it can really mess people up. I've had people come to me that I've spent a lot of time working with to get them unprogrammed out of the messages that they've received from someone that has given them a fear-based message, that something terrible is going to happen in their life. Now, part of the reason that I discourage forecasting the future, not only do you have the opportunity to make a change tomorrow and it's going to change it, the other part of it is, so that would make me wrong, right? So I don't want to do it because I don't want to be wrong. But also I don't want to do it because I don't want to give you bad information that is not serving you. The other part of that is, if someone in a position of supposed authority, which generally if someone's come to you for a session and they're trusting your information, that puts you in a position of authority. If someone in a position of authority tells you such and such is going to happen, they have just doubled, quadrupled, maybe increased tenfold the likelihood of that happening, because we are what we think most of the time. thought creates reality. So if I've said to you, this is going to happen, then you have it in your head, this is going to happen. Well, I want to be really, really careful of what I'm telling you is going to happen, because it's not up to me to play God and give you these suggestions. So that's one of the other differences as well. Okay, so now astrology. Where does that play into it? How much do you know about astrology? You might be able to answer better than me.
No?
Okay. Astrology is a very exact science of the movement of the planets and the stars and everything like that. Now, that is going to... Let's say the planets and the stars are moving around. We haven't gotten to the big bubble yet, by the way. We will. We're still in this little one here. So in this little one, we've got the planets and the stars and everything around us like this that influences or intersecting our bubble. So all of those influences that are intersecting our bubble, that's that chart that you have done if you have your astrology read. If any of you had it done, there's the 12th house chart, and so each one of these planets intersects your 12th house chart in a certain way. That increases the likelihood of those potentials or those possibilities because of where in that system you were born. Does that make sense?
Well, free will is still all part of this whole,
absolutely,
whole direction of life, right?
Absolutely, it is.
Variants and variables become very skewed, and, people can tell you what. If I asked you to tell me about my future, you can tell me about my future based on this moment.
Exactly.
Let's say, but that change is inevitable, so that really has no validity for tomorrow.
Right, unless you go like, "Oh, I believe her,"
right,
and then you start behaving in a way that makes that happen,
right.
And then you go like, "Wow. She got that right."
But that can still be influenced by the planets.
It will be influenced by the planets too. Now, what I recommend to people is if they are going to an astrologer on a regular basis, that they take that information and they go like, oh, here's some tendencies, possibilities, probabilities. Are they ones that suit me? And if they are, continue on with the energy that that's creating for you. If they aren't, be very conscious about changing it.
Because not always are the information from astrologists of higher, like, positive. It can be, you got some bumps in the road coming, or there may be some changes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. They may be letting you know about challenges.
Right.
In your life. Absolutely.
I don't know a lot about astrology, but I do know that it's not so black and white. That if you're under an influence of a particular planet, that it may mean this or it may mean that. I mean, if we're talking about something ending, it could be a death, or it could be a relationship, or it could be something, it could be a job, or I don't know a lot about it, and you know who to go to for that. You come next week just to hear Gary Zyla talk. But it's at least my experience with having my chart done was that there were many possibilities, and it could look like this, or it could look like this, or it could look like that. And it was from that you'd go, wow, actually I think that it's this, because this is what I'm experiencing, or this is what potentially is going to be happening, or I booked a trip, or my mother's ill, I'm thinking it's that. And so it's information.
Yeah.
It's
but when we talk about the Mayans, right, and how they're coming to the end times, that's the...
Of one part of their calendar.
Calendar, yes.
Of the long count calendar. However, the Mayan calendar actually continues on indefinitely.
Because it goes on a 26,000-year cycle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you take that information and skew it and say, well, this is what they're saying is going to happen, considering they, predicted the eclipses that have happened within 30 seconds in the last thousands of years?
Mm-hmm. So they've been pretty accurate. That's however, accurate. The rest of the world has taken their information and skewed it tremendously. The Mayans have been putting very little stock in what all of the rest of the world has been going like. Oh, we just reached October 28th. It's the end of the ninth wave of the Mayan calendar, and everything's changing. And the Mayans are going like, it's not a big deal. Or if you see some of the jokes about it, it's like they stopped carving the wheel because they were tired. Their arm was tired, so they went for a beer. You know, which I kind of like that take on it. But astrology and the movement of the planets, that is fairly set. However, the influence that that has on us is malleable. So does it influence? Is it an exact science of reading a chart? Yes, it is. Is it an inexact science of interpreting a chart? Totally. It's totally open to interpretation. So I actually had my chart read just last week by Gary, and he was talking about a significant change in relationships last spring. And he said, you know, he always kind of does the double check. I want to make sure that I'm working your chart right. So this showed up in your past. Can you relate to it? So he always does those checks when he's doing the chart. And I thought about it for quite a while, and I went, yeah, there was pretty significant change in my relationship with one of my sons. Like, okay, that makes sense. Yep. That's dead on. Now, my sister, actually Chris's mom, had come to the session with me, and afterwards she said, well, when he said that about relationship, I wondered if it was a change in your and my relationship, because she and I are starting to develop some professional programs together, and it would have been around that time that we started talking about doing it. So there had been a shift in her and my relationship as well. So was it one of them? Was it both of them? Was there a planetary influence that accelerated the change in both relationships? All of those are possible. So I really encourage you to use astrology as a guidepost. Now, I've heard way too many people say, oh, blah, blah, blah is going to happen to me because my chart said. It's just a tendency. It's just a possibility. So as far as the movement of the planets, yes, it makes sense that people who really understand that movement could predict it to the minute. However, the influence that it has on us is very open to our what we do with it and how we work with it. And so those planets all have an impact on this bubble, but they're not the definitive answer because all of it has an impact. Our past and future lives have an impact because we carry cellular memory. The planets, the people that we've chosen to come into this lifetime with has an influence. There's so many factors that all have an influence on what we fill our bubble with.
When you say cellular memory, if we're just spiritual beings in a physical body, there's no cell in a spirit, is there?
We carry a level of memory back into each lifetime. So, and part of the reason for that is for our soul's growth. So think of this as spirit, and we're this little drop of spirit. So when we come into physical form, this drop has dropped down into a body, still connected to spirit, but our individual drop. Now, when that drop goes back up, it comes back up and it's reabsorbed into source, it still carries that information. Is it our own or is it someone else's? Is it the collective information? Don't know. It might be any one of those. What if we're all waves on the ocean? So our experience is a wave crashing up onto the shore. And then we're reabsorbed back into the ocean. And we take some sound with us. Do we keep it with us personally? Maybe, but not necessarily. So you never know. When you go into past and future lives, you might be going into somebody else's. However, there's some cellular memory there from some experience, whether it was yours, whether it was somebody else's. Doesn't matter. It's there. And that creates tendencies.
Did they call it the atom cell, like the two cells that stay with your lifetime after lifetime, part of your DNA that will appear in another. At least that's one of the things
yes.
I've read about anyway.
Yes, that's one of the theories.
Another, yeah. I'm just going to throw out another theory. When you're talking about astrology, one of the theories I read about too is that astrology has been around for lots of many years, as we talk about back the Mayans and so forth, in the Greeks and so forth, other different civilizations. Is the fact that it has been around in such a mindset that the people's thought patterns have created that as being a valid way to look at life and the way people their lives are going to unfold. And so that thought pattern has been put out there. And it's built up over years and years of time of people building on that. So that's created that, in, if you like, in the etheric realm, mm-hmm. that yes, that is a you know a definite way of looking at how lives will unfold. I also believe, you know, we have free will choice as well. So it is kind of, I've thought about this too, and it's kind of an interesting way to look at it from, you know, free will versus something that's giving you a pattern. Mm-hmm. And but I do look at astrology, and I look at people's characteristics generally, and I use this kind of as a little hobby sometimes when I meet somebody or talk to somebody after a while, to just by talking to them, getting an idea of how they are as to what might be their astrology sign, what's their predominant mm-hmm. sign. Not always right, but there's sometimes I've been fairly accurate. Some people just emanate certain qualities about that particular sign, and say, well, that person's a Taurus, or that person's, you know, an Aquarius, or whatever. Just by tendencies of the way you see them. Now, is that your own perception, or what's being fed back? But however it is, it seems to fit fairly well, because quite often that's fairly close. And sometimes you don't get somebody way off, but then you get talking, you find out what their sign is, and then you start, oh, okay, now I kind of see that in you. Without really trying to analyze them all together, but it's just kind of a hobby that I like to look at sometimes. So I think there is an element, but how much of that has been created by the fact that it's been years and years of patterns of people saying that it's the placement of these planets. And then every once in a while, a new one comes along, and then, and then something like Pluto, and they say, well, maybe that isn't one of the planets. And
yeah.
You have different astronomers coming up with this, and it sort of shakes things up a little bit. But true astrologists will say, well, no, that's still an influence. You can't just throw that one out. But I think there's been other planets.
Right, but whether it's an influence that they know about or not,
yeah.
It still may be an influence. Now, just to clarify, too, when you talk about someone being a Taurus versus being a Libra, that's a very general terminology. When I'm talking about this, I'm talking about your birth location, your birth time, and your birth date. Mm-hmm. Because you move that birth time even 20 minutes, it moves it a degree on the chart, and it could put all of those planets in different places and completely change your chart. So there's a huge difference between recreational astrology and professional astrology as well. But yes, you're absolutely right about the tendencies. There's humanity beliefs that, you know, we all believe them just because humanity believes them. We all believe that we can't fly. What if we can? You know, maybe we can just lift up off of the earth and fly. But, you know, popular wisdom is that we are too dense of a mass to be able to fly. And so we all believe it. Technically, an airplane shouldn't be able to fly because it's a very dense mass as well. But once it was proven that it was possible to fly and the aerodynamics were figured out, you know, we fly airplanes all the time now, and nobody takes, you know, nobody thinks anything of it. It gets taken for granted that that airplanes can fly. Aerodynamically, a bee shouldn't be able to fly. A classic example of this that I heard, my cousin is a holistic farmer, so he does very intense pasturing on a small amount of land and moves the livestock frequently. So the idea of it is that you graze it right down and then let it completely grow back up and graze it right down and let it completely grow back up. It's Neil I'm talking about. And he has had phenomenal success with it. He has, on his land, there have been, up till 2 years ago, he'd identified 14 varieties of wild plants that were considered gone from that entire part of the province. They had reappeared on his property. And he had a bunch of people out from Ottawa showing them what he had done and showing them these plants and stuff like that. And one of the agriculture experts said, well, that's not possible. And Neil said, I don't really care if it's possible. There they are. And one of the other people with a little more insight said, well, you've proven it. Now we have to go back and figure out the theory. Because theoretically, it's not possible. Those plants had been gone from that area for long enough that it should not have been possible for them to spontaneously reappear. And so we have tons of popular beliefs like that. well, it's been proven that this is possible. It's been proven that's not possible. And it becomes such a pervasive belief that everyone knows it, believes it. And so it becomes our reality. So that's exactly the same as what you're talking about with the astrology. So that all has an influence on us as well, on how we perceive time, how we navigate time, decisions that we make, all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's really quite fun. Sometimes I look at it and it's like, how can we even get out of bed in the morning with all these things influencing us? You know, we're quite amazing beings that we keep on having our individual experiences. Now, the other thing with this, and it probably relates to what you were saying about the DNA that carries those cells with our memory, is we have a tendency that forms, wow, is there any racing very well? Well, we have a tendency that forms over time. So if over time, or maybe right now, if there is no time. So we have all of these lives bouncing around in this bubble. So now it doesn't matter if it was 1872 or 3000 or when it was. It doesn't even matter if it was on Earth. It doesn't matter if it was in this dimension. They're all in the bubble. They're all in this multidimensional experience that is this bubble. These are all of our different lives that we've lived. And in there comes tendencies, or it can be thought of, so yeah, I guess everybody here would still know what a record was. You know how there's individual grooves in a record? And you get in the groove. You end up in a particular groove, lifetime after lifetime, because of tendencies. And so maybe in this lifetime, I'll color code this. So you've lived this lifetime and you had this blue experience, and this one, and this one, and this one. So now it's most likely when you come into one of those other lifetimes, you're going to carry that tendency. However, as souls back at source, we can decide we want a completely different experience or challenge. One of the places that you will see this tendency is when most souls will choose male for a number of lives or female for a number of lives, but then they want to change it up. And they come in with male tendencies in a female body, and then they have a gender identity crisis. That's one of the things, it's one of the very obvious ones that you can see in people are in a tendency, but they're choosing to change it to have a different experience. And I mean, there's lots of other things like that as well, but each one of those things creates a tendency for each one of our experiences. And so if we keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, lifetime after lifetime, those become very strong tendencies for us. So then, you know, which lifetime are we in?
Is there an interplay? Like, if an individual, in theory, an individual has multiple personalities, like, I've read this before, that there's, like, everybody has multiple personalities. Is it, like, an interplay between the realities and past lives? Like, people act different ways in different environments. Some do, anyways, from what I'm aware. Could, in theory, that be some sort of interplay between all those realities? And would you draw that? I don't know.
Possibly. Possibly.
Saying like it, but, yeah, I guess I think it's possible. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't jump in and say, yeah, for sure. I haven't explored that one enough to give you a, you know, I haven't done enough work with people thinking of that when they're in a regress state to give you an indication one way or the other what I found around that. But it would make sense to me that it would be possible. What I can tell you about people's different behaviors around different people, though, and this one I've worked with a fair amount, is that we're all of these components or parts that are all... So now we've got this body, and please pardon my ability to draw. I'm not even going to try and make it look like a person. But so we've got this body, and we've got these different parts or tendencies. And we all come in with all of them. We all come in with the best of the best and the worst of the worst. Or what, you know, from our current view of the world, whether or not they're good or bad. So we've got them all in here. Now, there's some of them that are more dominant and some of them that are more recessive. And some of that is based on this. So that might be where the interplay of personalities comes in, because if we've had those personalities before, they may be more dominant, so they're more likely to show up in this lifetime. And then there's some that are very not dominant. Now, when these parts are in conflict, in serious conflict, that's when you get multiple personalities. So the ab person actually moves out of this personality into this personality, and they're not even aware of what that personality is doing, to the extent that this one can be diabetic and this one is happy. And that's been medically tested, that this personality can be just fine, and they step into this personality and they're a diabetic, and maybe a severe diabetic. Like they jump in and they go into insulin shock because this one didn't eat for the last 24 hours. It can be that extreme. But within this, there is also a lesser tendency that we display various parts at various times, depending on what our surroundings are.
And what does that tell you about healing?
That we can heal anything. Absolutely anything. We as an individual, not me, not I can heal you, but you within yourself can heal anything. So all of the healers, all they do is facilitate the possibilities for the person.
And same with the healing tools.
Mm-hmm. They're just facilitation for us to do it ourselves. To make us believe that it's possible, or to give us hope, or to give us that little nudge, that extra energy. Theoretically, we should be able to eat and drink anything, and never take care of ourselves and be in perfect health because we have that potential. But then theoretically, we should be able to take amazing care of ourselves and be incredibly sick because we also have that potential. You know? We have all of the potentials. But yes, profound healing is possible at the personal level. And anybody that says, I will heal you, no, they won't. They may facilitate it. They may hold the space for you. They may provide the possibility. They may assist energy transfer to make it happen. But you're the one that heals yourself, always.
Just relating that to time, too, like there's, you know, we have this concept that the average lifespan is a certain age or something, but it could be, you know, that time has passed on. You could be 150 years old, 200 years old, if you were, you know, didn't necessarily buy into, well, you get to a certain age and do certain things and that's going to run you down. We have that potential. I'm not saying that, you know, anybody very much uses it, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are people that are well over 100 years old in the world. They go like, wow. And there have been for many years. Been people that have lived well over 100 years.
And then there's an interesting thing, too. I haven't seen the movie, but a movie called Time. I've seen a preview of it where people were grabbing each other's time for, you know, you have so everybody's given a certain amount of time, but you can then trade time, codes, and have more time. And I didn't see the movie, but I think it was a little bizarre in a way, but it was an interesting take on time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like it. What's that one with Leonardo DiCaprio, all of the multi-realities.
Inception?
Inception, yes. That's an interesting exploration of time, if you look at it from this perspective. It's very interesting going like, wow. So he's just popping out of one bubble into another and then back to the first one. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. The number of movies that there are around right now that really explore some of these kinds of things in really quite profound ways. Yeah. The other thing with time, or what we think of time, is how long it takes for something to heal. We think when we break our leg, it's going to take, 3 to 6 weeks in a cast. And then, you know, it might be sore for a while and stuff like that. Whereas in the outback in Australia, when the Aboriginals would break a leg, they would do ceremony around it, they would bandage it up, and the next day it would be healed. And away they would go. And I'm sure there are tribes all over the world that haven't been exposed to Western medicine yet that do the same kind of thing. Because they know that it's possible. They haven't been programmed out of that innate ability that our body has to heal instantly. Because it does. There's documented cases of tumors disappearing in 2 to 3 minutes. They've actually been recorded. There's actually, the ultrasounds have been recorded of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, any other questions or comments on that? I think we're getting to the point that if we're going to do a regression, we probably should do it. But I want to make sure that we're kind of done with this part first.
I've heard that quantum physics, things that they discovered with particles, kind of suggest that time and space is also a factor which traditionally matter does not abide. We're talking about linear point A, point B, and things seem to progress along the timeline. Well, in quantum physics, things don't progress along the traditional timeline. And I was wondering if that is some sort of an allegory or parallels what you're talking about with past life regressions. Does the physical world offer examples of what you're talking about in this example?
Mm-hmm.
It does?
Yeah. Even the example of time flies when you're having fun,
mm-hmm.
or time really drags. You know, time is malleable, and it moves. And part of the whole quantum physics thing, too, is it a wave or is it a particle? Because it depends on whether or not it's being observed. It depends on what's being done to it. All of that kind of thing, that it can move back and forth between a wave and a particle. And so everything that we think is real, the key word there is think. We just think it's real. The reality of it is that it's so much grander and so much faster than we're even capable of beginning to understand in our little human bodies. So, you know, I've kind of, you know, probably made spirit laugh because I've tried to explain to you some non-3D concepts in 3D terminology, and it's like there's really no words to describe it. So, yes, absolutely. The unreality of a particle completely factors into this, because otherwise how could we do a past life regression and go from here to here just by relaxing and going into our subconscious? How could we do it? But we do. People have profound experiences in past life regression. And, you know, your first experience might be profound, or it might be like, oh, I felt like I was making it up. You know, because a lot of people do. They get information in regression and they feel like they're making it up. And that's okay if the first time you do this, it does feel like you make it up. Or you might just get colors, or you might just get light or dark, or you might just get a sensation. You know, sometimes, especially if it's your first time experiencing another life, that may be the extent of it. But, I mean, people go into regression and speak other languages. They write out amazing formulas about stuff that they know nothing about. That's, you know, going someplace else and really having that experience, being there now. So, does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, anything else before I tell you a little bit about what to expect in the regression? All right. Now, I don't want to tell you too much about what to expect because I don't want to limit your possibilities. However, oh, and I'll stop this.